could never forget how reality came down around us.
Hello, welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. I'm your host, Carol Breguet. And with us now for the remainder of this hour is Eric Larson, the author of A Nation Gone Blind, America in an Era of Simplification and Deceit. Welcome, Eric, to the show.
Hello, Carol. It's wonderful to be speaking with you at last in other form than email. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm just sorry that we didn't have another half hour, but because of the technical difficulties, that's the way it is. But I really want to recommend this book that Eric has written to everyone. It's extremely powerful. I think that probably what we should focus on is the article that you most recently wrote, The Debate Over 9/11, which... It's kind of a damning look at the left's complicity in selling the official narrative of 9/11 by never questioning it seriously.
Yeah, it's a serious problem. I've actually even gone further than in that piece, but maybe we can save that for a little bit later. But the term came to me from Barry Zwicker and his wonderful book, Towers of Deception, and he called the left-leaning figures in the media who refused to talk about 9/11 openly, and he calls them the left gatekeepers, and that got me a lot of abuse and laughter from some of my friends in Canada because they think that the word left by American standards is ludicrous because left for them means actually something left. And here we're we call centrists leftists, and we call conservatives people who in Canada would be very, very far right. But nevertheless, my prototypical example is Amy Goodman. Seems to me that she's actually an enemy rather than an ally of the truth movement, and therefore of the impeachment movement, and therefore of the salvation of the Republic. I can say more, but I've talked too long. You can talk.
Well, actually, when you did write that piece, I did sort of respond to you in that I actually felt the same level of betrayal that I think that you felt.
Yeah.
Because when we marched demanding a congressional investigation of 9/11 back in January 2002,
yeah,
I wasn't too surprised by the corporate media's disdain and lack of coverage. Although actually, Fox News did cover it. And we did have like 10 minutes on, and I think the reason they showed us was they were just trying to say, oh, look at these pathetic nine individuals, how ludicrous, how crazy they are to even raise these questions.
But
that reached a lot of people and actually helped the movement grow because people realized that, you know, somebody has said something, somebody had questioned, and that's when, you know, the networking started. But what really did surprise me was Noam Chomsky and Norman Solomon and Amy Goodman and KPFA, with the exception of Bonnie Faulkner, Guns and Butter, because I felt betrayed by my movement because I was part of the anti-corporate globalization movement.
Yeah.
And I was so surprised. I hadn't even heard the term conspiracy theorist before. And all of a sudden I got, you know, black, tarred and feathered as such. And,
you know, my real life is as a fiction writer and a novelist. And this is a detour to try to save. I keep thinking of it. No, I know it's not thinking of it, but as it is, to try to save the Republic. But terms that should be expunged from the language, ex post haste. I always, one of them, of course, is conspiracy theory. But during the years when I used to have to teach creative writing, and luckily I had a chairman who was kind enough to let me teach actual literature because teaching creative writing seemed to me to be a rather watery undertaking when students had never read anything. So it was much more fulfilling to teach literature. But the term that I hated was creative writing. And it seems to me that it really ought to be expunged from the language also. I told my students, this was, of course, back in, 1971, a little while ago, that we should call our course not creative writing, but non-expository prose, which seemed to me more accurate. And conspiracy theory is a term that has been used to the disadvantage of everyone, not only those who use it, but those upon whom it has been used. The sooner it's gotten rid of, the better. And, of course, what we're talking about really is thinking and thought. And those who can think clearly and look at evidence and judge from it and make logical conclusions are those who are able to understand immediately that there's no question of conspiracy here whatsoever. That is to say, there is merely a matter of evidence, a matter of scientific evidence, a matter of logic, a matter of common sense. And all of these point to complete complicity on the part of the intelligence agencies and the mass media, the major networks, all having been involved in the pulling off of 9/11. So I ain't going to go down as a conspiracy theorist. I'm going down as a thinker and an observer.
Well, I appreciate the fact that that you've thought so carefully and especially in your book to just show the lack of thinking that has gone into the attacks as well.
Yeah.
And I think poor David Ray Griffin, those of us who have come to the same conclusions,
yeah,
we keep trying to figure out how to get our message across to reach ordinary rational people, but
yeah,
also the people who are most resistant to basic facts and rational thinking are the politicians, are the journalists. And Griffin, in his latest book, 9/11 Contradictions, he just simply points out, okay, these are the disparities within the official theory, and you have to say this is an outrageous conspiracy theory because it's not internally consistent.
It's not internally consistent. That's absolutely right. Is that the book aimed at the Congress? He's essentially addressing Congress in that book.
Yes. And we did raise enough money. It has been sent to every member of Congress as well as the Senate. And I have been trying to get it into the hands of the press. But these are the people who are the most resistant. And I think they are resistant because they are afraid of being tarred and feathered with the same brush. Because anyone who gives us any ink at all, then they are called a conspiracy theorist too. The people who give us the most sympathetic coverage, even if the San Francisco Bay Guardian, who was a co-sponsor of the first San Francisco inquiry into 9/11,
they did a
5,000 word article in the first page. They totally bashed Barry and me. And then, Steve Jobs, he got bashed as a conspiracy theorist for giving us so much attention.
Yeah. It's word magic. There's a terrible, terrible, terrible element of word magic which has got to be eliminated, and that first. And second, there's simply some element of empirical thinking whereby a person can look at. I mean, I'll tell you, when 9/11 happened, I was at home and uptown on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. My daughter from Canada called and said, "Dan, I heard on the radio." She set her clock. She was 2 hours different from us. So it was 10 o'clock here and 8 o'clock there. Her alarm clock went off, and it was the radio.
We only have a minute. We only have a minute, Eric, so you're going to have to wrap it up quickly.
I'll change that. I'll tell a story later when we have more time.
Wait, no. Actually, I just realized, because of this crazy schedule, I think we do have another 15 minutes.
Well, that's excellent. Whatever we do have, we'll take. the thing was that here everything was quiet. There she'd heard on the radio that this event had happened. And I said, "That's impossible. I would have been hearing sirens and such." But I turned on WINS, and indeed, there was all the story about the airplanes having hit the towers. And so there was a sensationalistic element to it from the very beginning. That was the entire purpose. But immediately it was identified, of course, as the fraudulent thing that it was, And it was terrifying. I myself, I don't think I'm a stupid person, and I liked high school science. I never went further in science, but all of my high school science disappeared when I saw the towers fall. I forgot about 32 seconds per second acceleration in a state of free fall, and the buildings all fell at a state of free fall. That means there was no resistance to the falling. That means that the underpinnings had to have been eliminated for the upper stories to fall at free fall speed. In 2003, I realized that. And again.
There's some distressing information, sir, which I think should be explained. Just which things have been lost and just what has been gained. Like the thousands of put options bought days before the crash.
Hello, welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. I'm your host, Carol Brier, and I'm speaking with Eric Larson, the author of A Nation Gone Blind, America in an Age of Simplification and Deceit, as well as the debate over 9/11. And Eric, you were talking about how you remember your science and
yes, and
figured that out, but it was like a couple years later after 9/11 that it suddenly dawned on you that that didn't make any sense at all, the original.
Yes, I was not sufficiently attentive. I was shocked by the collapses and the attacks, and I went into a kind of retreat, like I think most of the population. Then on a family vacation of 1 week, I took some books with me to read, and one was Gore Vidal's Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace. And in it, I first heard about the military stand-down of fighter interceptor craft. And I was... The hair on the back of my neck prickled up, and I thought, my God, it can't be true. And I, from 19, that was June of 19, of 2003, 2003, until now I've been reading rather steadily on 9/11, seeming to me the issue that we must get cured or we lose the republic. And the thing that has began after I'd read, I have it on my website, which has crashed inexplicably. I'm trying to reset it up. I had a list of what I said called the essential books on 9/11, and there are 18 of them. I've read many more than that, but the 18 that I've listed, I think, are the great ones, the good ones, the very, very solid, the scholarly, the convincing, the evidence-showing books. Having read them all, I became aware of something else, which hadn't struck me at first, which is that the entire media is lying. And I, of course, it now looks as though the mass media, the major figures in the media, the large newscasters, were in on it from the beginning. Because I happen now to become very, very, very positively pulled toward the no planes theory, which we can talk about if we have time. But first, just simply the matter of the media not covering 9/11 truth. The Times, for example, recently ran a piece about war protests downtown, and the only reason they ran the piece was because they could gloat, since it was that the gist of the piece was that it had drawn so very few people that there was really no protest. That was the news. But in any case, then my shock grew as I became aware that the liberal media were in on it as well. And I can name here. Here's the names I named in my recent piece. Go on.
I hope it's just me, but I couldn't hear you. Your voice.
You're kidding.
Just
you're kidding me.
Totally.
Oh, dear heaven. For how long? How much should I reset?
I don't know. But I don't know whether it's because you weren't facing your telephone or your microphone, or whether we had technical problems at this end.
Oh, I'm sorry. But in any case, the gist was that I understood from the beginning that the large mass media were in on the plan. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, good. Okay. I mean, there's something on my site, if it ever gets back up again. This is the famous BBC incident. I don't know if you probably have seen it, where the newscaster is saying that building number 7 has fallen.
Yes.
And you can see over her shoulder that it happened.
Yes.
So they're reading from a script.
Yes.
That is to say, the mass media were scripted, they had the story ahead of time, and they were all participating. They just didn't get their cue quite right. And now that's sinister. More sinister is that the liberal progressive left leaning progressive and let me just leave it at that, media are equally complicit. I have in my article these names: Alexander Coburn, Arianda Huffington, Bill Keller, editor of New York Times, Bill Moyers, Bob Herbert, Christopher Hayes, David Corn, Elliot Spitzer, ex-governor of New York, Frank Rich, Howard Zinn, Jacob Weisberg, editor of Slate, Katrina Vandenheuvel, editor of The Nation, Larry Silverstein, I call him developer, liar, profiteer.
But again, you're mixing up names, though. There, you have culprits in there as well as people who should be critical of the official story. I mean,
they should be. Well, the dirty villains like Larry Silverstein, this one thing is true. But what's interesting is that he's no more a dirty villain than Noam Chomsky.
I would argue on that. I mean, there are those who have blood on their hands, and then you have those who ignore the blood.
And which is worse?
That's different. Pardon?
I mean, which makes a person not complicit? The person who sees a murder occurring and walks on by, or the person who tries to stop the murder and can't and then walks on by, or the person who does the murder?
Have you heard about the Stockholm syndrome?
Well, yes, but not. I mean, the phrase, but I don't know what it is. Tonight, I don't know.
There was an incident where some terrorists or some people kidnapped other people, and I guess it took place in Stockholm. I don't actually know the whole story, but what happened was some of the victims. I think they were female. They actually slept with their the people who had them at gunpoint or knife point or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they theorized that they did this to feel safer.
Oh, I understand.
Okay. Yeah. So I think in some ways we see this with the media, where by not going after the short and curlies and exposing this administration in their most vulnerable area, their most egregious crime, which would totally outrage the entire country, the entire world, they feel safer. And I also think that this is part of it. Like, they're not going to get blasted as conspiracy theorists or have their even Dan Rather and Peter Jennings, whichever one it was who was saying, this looks just like controlled demolition.
That was Dan Rather.
That only came out on day one. It was hushed up after that. It wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
It was repeated. So there is, it's like they know. I know people who, like Norman Solomon, for example.
Mm-hmm.
He was really interested in doing the story on the Bush link to the Nazis, until he found out that he had been rejected by the L.A. Times, the New York Times, all the major publications. Then he wouldn't touch the story, because he knew that it was beyond the boundaries of something that he could write and have it printed by the major press.
Exactly.
And he didn't want to step outside of those boundaries.
I mean,
it's taboo.
It's absolutely. There's a wonderful essay by a fellow named, first name I can't remember, Cogswell is the second. I will give you this essay. And what he says is that the term conspiracy theory means taboo, not allowed to think about or talk about. Now, if I were a journalist, and I believe that I am now, and I saw a murder of a nation and a murder of a people and a murder of a way of thought going on, and my editor wouldn't publish it, I would go elsewhere.
Right.
If I had a scintilla of principle, a scintilla of conscience, a scintilla of heart, of feeling, and of fellowship feelings for my fellow countrymen. Now, the cowardice of the press, in the case of the mass media, it's not cowardice, it's complicity, pure and simple. They agreed to read and follow the script of murder.
But
the others are hypocrites on top of it.
Yeah, but what has happened, too, is that there are people who have just simply left the corporate media and become the new media. Because
and where are they?
Well, they're part of us. They're part of the new movement. They're creating new new things.
Yeah.
I mean, we have... there's a lot of people I know who are becoming new media, who are producing television shows, who are getting it out on other channels, and that's what we see. We have a caller, too. Matt from Austin, did you have a question or comment?
Actually, thanks for taking my call so quick, too. That was awesome.
You don't have much time, though. You got to have the real fast.
Dan Rather had a comment where he said it was like in Africa where they would put a flaming tire around your neck, around the center's neck, and that was the fear that the media would have, that they would have their the flaming tire around their neck.
That's right.
So, you know, I think the media is, you know, and I don't know what's more complicit, you know. I think they're equally complicit with the murderers, you know, because they're perpetuating the lie on everybody. So, and so that.
Carol?
Well, thank you, Matt.
Carol?
Eric? Yes.
Courage, principle, forthrightness, truth are not things being represented by and large at all in our print media or our television media.
Right.
Only on the bloggers.
Right, and they're losing their credibility, and people are finding the new media because it has value and truth, and it serves people.
So it tells the truth. We must push for it, and it's very, very difficult.
Yeah, but we have to be creative and brave and keep on at it, and thank you so much for the effort that you put into your book and into your essays and for speaking out, because I think it makes it easier for more people who are intelligent and rational to also come forward.
I hope so. Thanks, Carol. It's wonderful, and keep on the good work. I'm all for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank
Absolutely.
You so much.